Hi, and welcome to the Provider Podcast by NHS Providers. My name's Adam Brimelow, and in this episode, we're looking at race equality. This is on Trust Board's agendas as never before, as we've seen the way the pandemic has exposed glaring inequalities and, of course, the outcry and sense of injustice following the murder of George Floyd. We know there have been successive initiatives in the NHS, but still, the data paints a stark and depressing picture of racial injustice faced by staff, patients and service users. Drawing on extensive and detailed feedback from trust leaders in our new report, Race 2.0, Time for Real Change, we'll explore what progress boards have made, what are the big challenges, and what does good look like? And we'll outline the role NHS providers can play in helping them deliver real change. We'll also hear from our Chief Executive, Chris Hobson, on the journey he's been on personally and professionally to become actively anti-racist. You can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. But first, Chris Hobson. He's been reflecting on how, as a white leader, making the move from being not racist to actively anti-racist is a challenging, sometimes painful experience, but also rewarding, and is fundamental to our work and culture at NHS Providers.
Thanks, Adam. It certainly has been a challenge, and I think one element of the challenge is that our member trusts, our staff and our stakeholders have told us that we've been behind the curve here, and that we've taken too long to properly engage with this vitally important agenda, particularly given the fact that these issues are so long-standing. And as we know, many ethnic minority leaders and staff are angry and frustrated with the NHS's collective leadership to address them. So that's been a particularly difficult message, I think, for me to hear, because as somebody who's incredibly proud of what NHS Providers has achieved under my leadership, it's made me question how effective my leadership has been. We have, though, had a really good dialogue. We've deliberately taken time with the help of a group of race equality advisors and our own internal race equality and cultural inclusion group to have a really good cross-organisation dialogue. And again, a number of those messages were difficult to hear. The dialogue told us that having an all-white director leadership team is a serious problem, as, for example, it's potentially deterred some people from joining NHS Providers. The dialogue told us that our ethnic minority staff are less likely to feel valued and are less likely to say NHS Providers champions diversity and seeks out different viewpoints. And our dialogue also told us that we've done nowhere near enough on this agenda, and that although we've done some things like publicly challenging the Sewell report for failing to acknowledge the link between structural racism and health inequalities, our internal behaviours, our internal approaches and our internal structures haven't matched what we've said externally on race, and that's not appropriate. And again, I think I've felt personally very challenged when I felt every single one of my 58 years and every inch of my white male middle class privilege. Particularly, I think I'd observe in the face of younger colleagues who seem to reflexively engage with these issues much more effectively than I do. And I think there have been some occasions where, to be frank, very rarely for me, I've been lost for words as I grapple with the concepts and the language, worrying that I'm going to say the wrong thing. It's also, I think, asked me some really difficult questions, like how do I reconcile my responsibility for everyone in the organisation when there may be some members of staff who are uncomfortable with concepts like white privilege? But I do think we are making progress. As I said, we've been late to the party, but I think we are kind of making progress. We're working on an organisational anti-racism statement that we hope to finish really quite quickly, and that I hope will unite the organisation behind a clear ambition. We're also now working on an action plan so that we can objectively measure our progress. I mean, it feels like there are a really huge number of opportunities here to, for example, embed anti-racism in our board development and director induction work, to broaden our support offer to our member boards so that we can help them accelerate the progress that's desperately needed here. And I think to use our influence with organisations like NHS England and the CQC to ensure they play their full role too, to really embed anti-racism in everything that we do. I think for me, the key point and the reasons as to why we use the word anti-racist is that we know that in aggregate, whole sections of our population suffer worse health outcomes as a result of their ethnicity, and whole sections of our NHS staff are unable to give of their best as a result of how they're treated due to the colour of their skin. And as in society as a whole, not being racist is far too low an ambition if we're to tackle these issues. We have to be actively anti-racist. And I think we're right to invest time and resource and money in this activity and in tackling health inequalities. But just to make the observation again, I am finding it a hard and challenging journey, but I feel it's one that I, the NHS providers and the wider NHS must make, and we should be proud to make it.
Chris Hobson there. So let's have a quick scene setter for where the NHS is on race equality, what's been happening to address racial injustice and structural racism, and the role that NHS providers can play to help deliver real change. And I'm joined now by Saffron Cordery. Saffron, I think the starting point is that structural racism exists in our society, in the NHS, and within our organisation. And as NHS providers, we're determined to play our full part in addressing that. So what is it we're doing?
I think that's absolutely right, Adam. And I think our starting point is that structural racism exists. And I think what we've seen following the murder of George Floyd nearly 2 years ago now, and the real sense of health inequalities coming centre stage in COVID-19 has been an extra push to put race equality firmly on the agenda of the NHS and on the agenda of NHS providers. And I think what we have done in NHS providers is take it up and say, we know that there are challenges within our organisation in terms of not everyone experiencing what we would want them to experience, not everyone having that experience of NHS providers being a great place to work. And of course, the structural racism that exists out there is very much existing within our organisation as well. There isn't a difference between the two. And that's what we've been taking on board. And it's not been an easy journey, and it's not been something that has been just another work programme that we have delivered within the organisation. It's very much been a difficult and reflective journey, but we have reached a good place in terms of our internal work. And then alongside that, we have been absolutely clear in conversations with NHS trusts up and down the country that it's absolutely right for us to work to support our member organisations in their journey, focusing on supporting boards to tackle racism within their organisations. And I think that has been and will be a journey as well, because we know it's not easy material for any organisations. It's uncomfortable. People have had some difficult conversations already, and they will have more difficult conversations. But it is a significant priority for the NHS at the very top level, the NHS in terms of trusts across the country and in terms of organisations that support the NHS like ours, and also in terms of what it means for staff and patients and communities.
So that captures what we're setting out to do. Where are we up to with that?
I think where we're up to in terms of our internal work, we are making good progress, and we've just embarked on the development of an anti-racist statement, which is looking at how we will become an anti-racist organisation and the action plan that sits alongside that. And I think that's really important. We can all speak fine words, but in that age-old phrase, fine words butter no parsnips, and you absolutely have to put the action alongside it. And that is what we are seeing at the moment, that the organisation is embarked on action planning to deliver that. And of course, we're also working with our board of trustees, who are elected chairs and chief executives from across our membership. So they have that connection in to frontline NHS as well, which I think is really, really helpful. That's what we're doing on the internal work. On the externally facing work and the support programme, we are in full engagement with our member trusts, listening really hard to what we know that they want to achieve and understand where they want to get to, listening hard to the progress they think that they have made so far, challenging that and working with expert advisors so that we can develop a program that really helps to support them to tackle structural racism within their organizations. I think it's really important work, and I think that it's work that hopefully at the end of the day we will be incredibly proud of, and incredibly proud of the change that we can achieve through that.
Saffron, there are lots of organizations working already in this space, aren't there? Is there really a need for someone else to get involved?
Well, that's a really good question, Adam, and it's one that we are asked frequently. My starting point and our starting point as an organisation is we never want to duplicate what's already being delivered out there. If trust can access exactly what we were proposing to provide, there would be no point in us doing it. Our aim is to add value and to inhabit a space that others aren't inhabiting. And that's why we work so closely with our member trusts in developing programs of support that will really help them in their particular context and will inhabit a space that others aren't inhabiting. And I think that's the critical element of what we are doing. And we are working explicitly at the board level. That's where we are focused. And so it's not about duplicating other training programs, duplicating other support schemes. It's about saying, where can we work on a bespoke basis with our membership to really add value and help them to make progress as fast as they can? And that's why we're doing this.
So on now to our report, Race 2.0, Time for Real Change. And in supporting our members to deliver real change, we needed to know where they're up to. The report provides an honest playback of their views on where their organisations are in the journey towards racial equality, and a snapshot of where NHS boards feel they've made the most and the least progress. Well, to find out more, I'm joined now by NHS Providers Interim Director of Programmes, Jenny Reindorp. Jenny, how have we gathered the information for this report?
So the report is based on extensive engagement with our members that started with interviews with ethnic minority and white chairs and chief executives from a wide range of trusts. We then conducted a member survey which had over 250 responses from 130 trusts, so more than 60% of our membership. This included a mix of exec and non-executive roles and feedback from acute community, mental health and ambulance trusts across the country. So it's a playback of the insights gathered through this research.
So the standout finding from the survey was that just 4% felt that race equality is fully embedded as a core part of their board's business. But I think this reflects the fact that for most boards, this is a work in progress.
I think that's absolutely right, Adam. There's evidence that some trusts have made progress in particular areas. So if you look at the Workforce Race Equality Standard, there's an increasing number of ethnic minority staff at very senior manager levels. And there's definitely examples of good practice to share. But I think both our interviewees and our survey respondents were clear that for the vast majority of trusts, there is a long way to go to really ensure that a focus on addressing race inequality is integral to all board discussions and decision making, rather than something that's considered intermittently when the board reviews its EDI action plan or performance against the Workforce Race Equality Standard. So I think the challenge that we really heard was how to make this a real heart and mind shift, which makes race inequality not just the responsibility of the director of workforce or the EDI lead, but something that's seen as a real and urgent priority by all board members.
And when you look at the work that's going on, what were the other key areas of most and least progress?
So yeah, our survey respondents felt that the most progress had been made in placing more leadership focus on staff networks. And nearly two-thirds felt they'd made progress in building a more diverse board, and the data clearly shows that. On workforce measures in particular, I think members felt they'd made progress on improving workforce data, there's still a long way to go, and implementing more inclusive recruitment practices. But there's a lot of evidence of how much more progress needs to be made from the feedback we received. So Less than a third of trust leaders said they'd incorporated race equality into their board assurance framework. So they're really embedding it into the heart of the way the board operates, how it considers risk, how it seeks assurance. Only a third felt they'd made progress on promotion pathways and processes, is obviously a really critical issue. And only 6% of respondents felt they'd made progress in thinking about how they tackle race inequality in their procurement practice. So looking rigorously at their suppliers and seeking commitments and assurance that they've built a focus on race equality into their everyday business.
Yeah, so clearly there are some real obstacles, aren't there, getting in the way of work to address race equality. What are the big obstacles, the big challenges that have to be overcome?
So listening to what our members said in the survey and our interviews, one of the biggest challenges was having the time and capacity to make an impact on race equality. And I think that's particularly the case where leaders felt they had an uphill struggle in persuading other board members of the urgency of prioritising race equality, given the ongoing and the really stark evidence of racial injustice that's still facing staff, patients and service users. I think some leaders there described having to subsume a focus on race equality within other topics to stop the board members becoming disinterested. So I think there's something there really about the hearts and minds challenge here, about are people really genuinely committed? I think ethnic minority leaders were very clear about the double burden that they can often face of experiencing discrimination while also feeling the pressure to lead on race, especially when their white peers aren't comfortable playing a leadership role. So I think there's a clear challenge which we want to focus on about how you encourage a genuine sense of shared ownership and responsibility across the board and really active white allyship. I think engaging middle management in meaningful change was also described as a key barrier that needs to be overcome by a number of members. And so recognising that this is about leadership from the board to engage the whole organisation in making race equality a genuine priority.
Thanks, Jenny. I think one of the positive and helpful aspects of this report is you've identified a number of areas of good practice, 10 altogether, that of approaches that have been found to really make a difference. If you had to pick out sort of 3 or 4, which ones would you light on?
I would probably highlight 3 in particular, actually, that I think were reflected through our interviews in particular. I think the focus on personal values and behaviours, so the role of board members and white board members in particular in leading by example. So, you know, demonstrating that people have really engaged with race and racism, not just intellectually, but also emotionally, that people have really been listening and seeking to understand people's lived experience and some of the really justifiable anger and frustration about how little progress has been made in some areas, and demonstrating through their actions that there's a real sense of urgency. I think there was a theme around how to foster safe spaces where it's possible for people to have what can often be quite difficult to have the honest conversations about race, where people feel they can talk up about their speak out about their experiences, and people can recognise some of the discomfort and vulnerabilities this topic throws up as something that's essential if this is really about meaningful change. And I guess the other one I would pick out was the theme around accountability. So how can boards be really clear how they're going to hold themselves to account to ensure progress is made, but also really sustained? And this is about outcomes, not just action plans. And how do NHS leaders feel that they're really taking personal accountability for making change happen?
Jen, thank you. So let's dig a little deeper now with Sim Scavazzo, who helped with the research and is also advising on a programme of member support to help them tackle race inequalities and become anti-racist champions in their neighbourhoods and wider system partnerships. Sim, you've spoken to a lot of trust leaders in the course of this research. How convinced are you about the level of buy-in for race equality as a real fundamental priority?
Well, to be honest, it's a mixed picture. And the reality is such that a lot of trusts are in a lot of different places in their journeys, both as organisations and as individual chairs and CEOs. So we need to respect that and understand that. So it's a very varied picture. But I guess that the main thing is, and I was heartened by the absolute will and want to move the dial on this agenda. That was the overarching response I got from a lot of the white CEOs and chairs we spoke to. There is a will and they want to make things change. The issue is, how do they do this? How do they do this effectively? So I'm convinced that the momentum is there. I can see a mixed picture, but I can certainly say there are no shortcuts to this work. As Saffron alluded to, it's hard work. What we know is that individuals have to go on this journey in order for their organisations to move forward. So that is key. Whilst intellectually, there's a lot of understanding that there's a huge issue within the NHS. That's great, but that won't change the dial, that basic sort of intellectual understanding. It's about how individuals feel about structural racism on a personal level that really matters.
And I suppose, Sim, different trusts have different challenges, they're working in different areas with their own distinct populations. How transferable are the examples of good practice that you've identified?
I think a lot of them are very transferable. I have to go back to the individual work. You know, everyone has to do the work. So that's regardless of what sort of trust you operate in and what sort of geography you operate in. But some of the things that were kind of brought up by the trust and by the members were sort of well-resourced, let's say impactive staff networks. That seems to be something that really can be shared. So that becomes a standard common practice, but they must be well-resourced and they must have access to boards so that they can be impactive, at least more impactful. But best practice is a sort of the education and evidence giving so that people understand the context with which they're working. I think a lot of the issues around this work at the moment is that a true understanding of the structural nature of racism, the fact that it's embedded in everyday things, everything that we do, every sort of practice or process or policy that we have will have embedded bias within it. So the key is to sort of dismantle some of that. And the key is to get those leaders to understand that and what that really means for people of colour. So there are things that can be really, really shared amongst all the trusts. And then there'll be the individual nuanced pieces of work that they will need to do to suit their own staff members, plus the local geographies.
So I was discussing with Saffron a little earlier on about how important it is to NHS providers that we can add real value in this space. What is it that trust boards want from NHS providers?
They want help in absolutely moving this agenda on. And from the people that we spoke to, they see NHS providers as a standard bearer in terms of quality and training, in terms of advocacy, in terms of convening and influential power. So what the trusts need from NHSP is clarity of direction. They need to be challenged. White CEOs and chairs want to be challenged in a very constructive way. They want NHS providers to be able to help them with the sorts of questions that they need to ask in order to ensure that they have absolute assurance that the processes, the activity that their trusts are undertaking will lead to impact. The other thing that trusts really said they wanted from NHS providers was an influencing to the other national bodies as well. So, for example, the CQC was actually brought up a lot, and the fact that, you know, there needs to be a framework around race metrics within their work so that trust can be measured in terms of progress on those lines. So NHSP has a really vital role to play. And it seemed to me that the members really wanted providers to step up and start talking about race in a way that they haven't done before. And that was noted. I think one of the comments we got back from one of the trusts was late to the party. Yes, but in my experience, it's never too late. And in my view, actually, NHS providers has an excellent opportunity here. A lot of people, as you said, have been in this space for a long time, working hard, and they've made good progress, but there's still much more to be done. And there's a window, there's a moment in time, timing is everything. NHS providers are now coming in at a time where the window's wide open. I think never before has there been a clarity around structural racism, and it's appeared, hasn't it, in football, in cricket. So you've got normal people understanding exactly what that means. So this is a great time for providers to be pushing their work in this area.
You talked about the need for action and this being a great time for action. What is it about the characteristics of NHS providers and its the way it works that makes it well placed to deliver on that need?
I think it's, as Saffron said, providers work with boards, and we know that boards set the culture of their organisations. So if we can start with the boards and the unitary boards, the chief executives, and then that flows down through the organisation. It's no good putting in programmes into the middle of trusts if boards and chief executives are not understanding and not willing to contribute and to push this agenda. So that's a very sort of distinctive difference with where providers would attach itself. The second thing is, I think the quality of work that NHS providers is able to put out, there's a lot of trust. There's a lot of understanding that work that NHS providers put out is based on evidence. It's researched well. So there's an enormous amount of trust. And I can't stress the importance of, again, I'm going to say the timing, because NHS providers is a new voice in this space, a voice that hasn't been heard before. And that really chimes with trusts. It's a sort of a prick up your ears moment if Chris and Saffron and the whole organisation all of a sudden is starting to talk with authority about race. And I think this is a huge advantage, the novelty of that voice chiming at a time where the window is open gives NHS providers an opportunity that perhaps other organisations haven't had up until now.
Well, Saffron, we heard there the window's open, the timing, the need. What are the next steps for NHS providers in terms of finalising and delivering the support programme?
So we are at a pivotal point, as Sim said. So now we have listened to what members have told us. We have really scoped what the need is out there. The next step for us is to test our proposition more widely and genuinely make sure that we are meeting member need as we develop that. Because as I said earlier, we don't want to duplicate, but we genuinely want to add value. And to do that, we need to test as we go and make sure that our offer is spot on. And I think, you know, alongside that, we will be continuing our working as an anti-racist organisation and being really willing to be held to account on our work on that. And I think the two elements come together, the work we do internally as an organisation and the support work, because it's within that that we can also develop our narrative so that we can make sure that in our externally facing work, in our voice work, in our media work, in our influencing work, we are able to provide a voice that counters structural racism, that critiques policies from that perspective and helps build to the general sum of knowledge on this issue from our unique perspective.
We did hear Sim talking about a perception about NHS providers being late to the party. Should we have been doing more on this sooner?
Of course. And I don't want that to sound glib. We should have done more and earlier. I think that we are now embarking on this at full throttle, and it is a genuine priority for NHS providers. It sits up there as one of our key strategic priorities in our new strategy. So yes, we should have done more. We are late to the party in many elements of what we are doing, but we are fully committed and behind it now. And we are building on what others are doing, and we are surveying the landscape so that we can find our very particular place in that breadth of offers that are out there.
And as you say, building on what others are doing, but this is an area where there is a long history of good intentions, isn't there? How optimistic are you, Saffron, that NHS providers will be able to help deliver real change?
Well, I think that's a really difficult question to answer, isn't it? And I my heart is in this for the organisation to say that we are fully committed to working both as NHS providers and on our journey on becoming an anti-racist organisation, but also putting our full commitment to working with trusts individually and collectively to support them. But, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. We need to see changes in the evidence. We need to see changes in the experience of Black and minority ethnic staff on the front line, what they experience, and also the experience of patients out there. So we won't know yet whether we have shifted the dial. And I think that, of course, we won't do it alone, and we're not seeking to do it alone. But I think what we do know is that we look hard at the evidence, we change course where we need to, where the evidence tells us that's what we should do. And we are absolutely dedicated to the quality of what we deliver. So we have a track record on which we can build in terms of the value of our other support offers and our other influencing work. And we want to continue in the same vein. But I think this is probably the toughest task that we have faced.
That's it. My thanks to Saffron and Sim, to Jenny Reindl and Chris Hobson. Remember, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.